This special edition of The Scenario is going to be a remix edition, as always. You know, that's where we captivate and give you different new content. Coming up, we have our homeboy Keith Robinson of NBA TV on Inside the NBA producer, STL and himself. But if you want to peep this one out, go to the video as well on our YouTube page. If you go to Straight OLC on YouTube, you can check us out. This one's on video. This is something you're definitely going to enjoy. This one's a PG version, so if everyone has their kids in the car with them, you can listen to this one. We appreciate y'all listening as always, and keep rocking.
Here in 1992, we present the fabulous What's the Scenario remix. Whereas there are seven MCs, six which are...
Welcome to another edition, video edition of The Scenario. We are back. We are finally back in here. Matt, my brother, how are you doing?
I'm making it, man. I went outside for some physical activity. I feel like everybody's in jail. So I went outside and had some yard time today and got me in 3 miles. But it was funny because I looked at my Nike Run thing and it had like, I had 662 miles. I was like, oh, I got to either do three or I got to do five because I can't have that 666 miles sitting on my thing. It's enough stuff going wrong as is. So I did a shorter run so I can skip over that 666 tomorrow, but I'm good, brother. Can't complain.
It's been cool, man. I can't complain with the Rona has been the Rona. The little Rona, it always seemed like it's around the corner.
You do, bro.
Every day I wake up coughing or I sneeze or something. And then you hear somebody else, if you're on the phone with somebody, and they hear you sneezing, you be like, no, that wasn't nothing. But they won't think you got the Rona.
Yeah.
You're like, no, I ain't do nothing, man. I kind of, you know, it's
dusty
in the office.
But man, we see. So one of the things I was like, you know, I look for a silver lining and stuff. I said, yo, listen, this is like the first time we booking a show. Everybody kind of is in the same place. So we're going to be able to catch up with people that there's no possible way that we could catch up with any other time. And I think our guest for this episode is somebody who I think might be a little bit busy this time of the year, maybe. So
I was just
man, introduce our guest, man.
Yeah, man. For the day, man. I'm happy about this. Producer, formerly of TNT, TBS, with Shaq and all those boys on the NBA tonight. But now he moved over and got more paper, more accolades over at NBA TV, like a young St. Louis player should. From the Lou, Hazelwood Central, you know.
West.
Hazelwood West. My bad, West.
The sister of the Hazelwood schools. Right. The long lost sister.
You were at the beginning when you were there when Hazelwood West, when everybody thought white people went there.
Yes. For sure.
Now it's different, but then people thought all white people went to Hazelwood West. And CMO graduate as well, Atlanta-based, man, one of the homies, man, one of my thorns on my side on FIFA soccer as well.
And I need to talk to both of y'all about that, man. But yeah, Keith Robinson in the building, man. Hey, thank you for taking time, brother. We truly appreciate it, man.
No, it's a pleasure to join y'all, man. I've been a big fan, long time listener, man. Y'all keep me connected to what's going on back home in St. Louis. So I'm constantly listening way back to the Straight Outta Low Cash days with Javon and Teddy was on there acting the fool. So
yeah, Javon's coming back too, man. On here. He got some coming up this week, man. So it's gonna
okay,
be funny
cool.
When I get it edited. It's gonna be funny.
man, thanks for having me.
Absolutely, brother. I mean, you bring up Javon, man. I still listen to like the best ofs, and I'd be like, this dude, like literally, this dude is a whole fool, man. Like,
no,
it's
crazy. Really a fool.
That I know this guy.
Dude, he's got a whole thing, man. I'll tell y'all who the person is after we off the air, but he has a whole sketch he's doing on like dudes that be like, somebody will say like say Crazy Bone and versus they said with 3-6 Mafia, DJ Paul having a battle. And this one particular person always jumps on Facebook. I remember when I was in a studio with them one time and I told them to keep it. Y'all may know who I'm talking about.
It's nothing like somebody that always likes to say who they with. Like,
yeah, always.
And I told them to do more murder. You know,
Are they saying that they know you too? Are they someone saying that they know you too? Or are you just bringing them up? Because if that's the case, this ain't a two-way thing. This is not a relationship. This is not a friendship.
No.
This is a name drop.
You just happened to be in a studio. Maybe you was riding by with the mop, like Bodie on The Wire, where when he rolled out the spot with the mop in the mop bucket, kind of walking by looking.
So, yo, speaking of The Wire, man, did y'all hear that that Van Lathan and Jemele Hill got a Wire podcast?
Yeah, I've been listening.
Yeah, I'm the ringer. Yeah.
I'm listening every episode, dog.
So I think we talked about, I don't know if we talked about this on the show or whatnot. I said that when the ringer signed Van Lathan, I said, oh, it's the affirmative action hire finally. Thank you, ringer. I appreciate it. But now I see that Bill is like channeling in folks that are, and channeling in for the culture. So I'm like, all right, bet. I'm okay now. Right. It's not a representative. I mean,
but wasn't Shea Serrano technically his first one?
Well, but Shea ain't a brother, though.
But I mean, you said affirmative action, though. You know, I was just saying.
Okay. I'm sorry. I guess that's a bigger picture.
Yeah.
What's that scholarship they gave out? The African American Legacy Scholarship or something? I don't know. Mizzou had a few of them. I couldn't get any of them because I transferred. But that's neither here nor there. But with Keith coming on the show, man, I had to dig into the crates, man. I got the Seattle Supersonics joint out.
That's right, man.
I'm excited, man, because in St. Louis, a lot of times I'm like, man, we can't talk about NBA because, you know, my background being in sports radio is like, I would love to get into NBA, but the audience would be like, this doesn't mean anything to me. Talk more about the Cardinals. Talk more about the Blues. Right. At that point in time, drag the Rams a little bit more. Just give us something. But, man, I feel like that's a huge thing that's missing in St. Louis is what the NBA could do here. Because I think the NBA would eat. I just don't see the pathway for it to come here currently.
Yeah, that's something that's always frustrated me about St. Louis is that we pride ourselves being a big sports town. NBA ratings always does really well in St. Louis. But like you said, when you get on sports talk radio, or even when I was working at Channel 5, you know, I started at Channel 5 and I would cut highlights. And the only time I would have NBA highlights would be Christmas Day or if David Lee did something or Larry Hughes was doing something. Like now it would be Brad or Jason Tatum or Ben McLemore. But like that would be the only time that you would see NBA highlights
Ben McLemore's
in
still in the league?
St. Louis.
Is Ben McLemore still in the league?
Oh, wow. Yeah,
yeah, he's with the Rockets.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We got this.
He's been a great season with the Rockets too. He was out the NBA last year, and he's with the Rockets now.
Yeah, I always got worried when I saw that Ben was out the league, man, because I've always felt like Ben McLemore is like one of them sleeper cats that came out the loop.
Yeah.
Like you knew it was there, but it wasn't a lot of cats that was getting up to go to Wellston to watch nobody ball. Let alone, like, nobody's going to Wellston in general. I grew up about three blocks from Wellston, and I wasn't going to Wellston. So, you know what I'm saying? But, yeah, for him to come out and do what he's done, man, you got him, you got Patrick McCall. Like, St. Louis has, like, a basketball legacy that's not even, like, way back in the day. Like, right now, there's a bunch of cats that can ball out of the crib that if there was a team in St. Louis, there would be, like, love. And I think it would even be even more kids that would be coming out.
But that was my only thing about it is, like, I don't know if St. Louis could support an NBA team only because the way that the sports calendar is set up, right? So, you know, NBA, you're talking about between September when training camp opens all the way to June if you win it all. Mm-hmm. And for St. Louis, you're fighting up against college football with Mizzou. You're fighting up against St. Louis Blues. The Cardinals are always in October.
So that's null and void. Nothing's gonna happen with Mizzou.
Stop.
Though,
so go on. Good. Stop. That's what you were saying.
But you got they on the up and up, man. They just signed a number one player in St. Louis. I saw last week, man. So the Mizzou football on the come.
It's about time we didn't keep letting Bob Stoops or Ohio State come in and take them out of here.
But it's just the way the calendar falls. So you're talking about Cardinals to October, and then starting back up in April. You got the Blues, and that's 41 nights of 41 home games that St. Louis would have to support. I think it might be enough, but that's what I would worry about. I don't know what you all feel, but
I feel like the problem is that, and maybe this has kind of been changed a little bit, is that there wasn't the venue for a while. Like everybody says, go to the Scott Trade or go to the whatever you want to call it, whatever it's this the Enterprise now. But the problem was is that it didn't have enough luxury boxes for an NBA team to come to town. And you're going to be a big part of anything, huge part for the Cardinals, selling corporate sponsorships. And if you're not being able to sell those corporate nights that are going in those luxury boxes and things like that, can you support it? And the Blues does well, but the Blues are a community type of team. They've got their people that they're built in with, and they're going to always follow them, and they're going to be there and do their thing. But also, it takes big money to to get an NBA team. And I don't know who the person is in St. Louis that's got the roots here that would be able, that would be willing to do that. I mean, maybe my man from Square, or, you know, my guy from Twitter might do it, but I mean, they're not here, you know? So, I mean, how would that actually play out?
The Enterprise family probably would have been the ones to do it, but they just invested into that MLS squad. So that's another team that would, yeah, it's not billions that's sitting out there. Cause like you said, it's going to cost. Well, actually, I don't know. There's been some reports now that, because we're in this COVID situation, that all these teams are losing money. We may see in the next year or so some of these franchises throughout all of sports come on the market, and they may not be going as much as they were before all this had happened. You know, I mean, before teams were selling for billions of dollars, it might be a couple hundred million now.
Because basically, the Houston Rockets owner's in a negative now, right? Like, he's basically
all
his money is in tourism. So, like,
yeah. Well, and the crazy thing about it is you're going to see a lot of that stuff impact a lot of teams in sports, I feel like, because, you know, and especially in the NFL, now those guys have astronomical money, but, you know, based on how things are right now, they're not going to get a dollar from the gate. They're not going to get a piece of profit, even if they do bring the team, the sport back. So, I mean, it would all be from media packages. It would all be a lot different income that would happen based on, you know, what operating costs look like. So the sports landscape on the other side of this COVID-19 thing is going to most certainly change for a whole lot of teams. And, you know, and that's a good point you made, though, Keith, is saying that, you know, maybe that does open up the door for more people to get in the game, because these guys are going to be looking to divest themselves of these of this really an expense now.
The only other thing I would say about St. Louis, too, is you wearing that shirt, Matt. Seattle's at the front of the line when it comes to getting the NBA franchise.
No, they already in the club. Like, Seattle's already in the club, but it's like they like people saying, like, your booth is going to be available in a minute. Just wait. Like, you wait for the wait.
They're just waiting.
Well, in Seattle, man, anybody that's been to Seattle, I mean, that's just one of the cities that's just growing on top of growing and growing. I mean, they've got the NHL team coming there in 2 years. Yeah. You know, you've got what the Seahawks have done there. It's just an amazing thing how they own it.
MLS has been big there.
The Sounders are big for soccer, too.
The Sounders are huge. Obviously, the Mariners are there. I think the Sonics are just a theft, though. Like, it's just like the Sonics are supposed to be there. I bought this joint more or less. I bought this shirt because I'm just like, you know what? I feel like this is like a Montreal Expos hat. Or, you know what I'm saying, or something like that. Like, you know, hey, I support the teams that should still exist, especially the ones from my childhood.
Doesn't the city of Seattle own the name Supersonics, too? So when they come back, they can actually name the Supersonics again, right?
Yeah. And they have the arena already built. Like, they are ready. They are just, like you said, they in the club. They're just waiting for somebody to slip up.
Yeah. Now, do you feel like if the NBA grows, though, the NBA would have to grow by two teams, or could they do incremental? Would they be able to go to 31, then 32, or what would that look like?
Well, there have been talks about, if they were to expand, you know, Seattle being up there, they would want to go international, whether that be down in Mexico City. I'm not sure if they would be bold enough to go across the pond just yet. So it would be, you know, whether Canada gets another team. You know, they used to have Vancouver that now are the Memphis Grizzlies. So I think they would probably, if they were to expand, they would probably expand by two teams. But that would mean the owners would then want to split their pie two different ways as well. So I wouldn't look for them to expand soon. I would look for, once we get out of this COVID situation, some of these teams that might be on the fringe already, like the San Antonio's or the Indiana's, Orlando's, those type of franchises who are already, Sacramento just built a new arena, but those type of small market franchises who are already on the fringe are going to be losing a ton of money. Those would be the ones that would probably, in my opinion, be the ones to move next. And like I said, Seattle, Louisville, Mexico City, Kansas City even will all be at the top of the list.
Well, how do you, with everybody being interested in this Vegas market, you know, I mean, you got the Raiders that are coming there. You know, you had the Golden Knights had big success there. I know that Major League Baseball's kind of had their eye on that area as well as Portland. You know, the NBA just feels like they would be, you know, the league that will most certainly look at that. Or is that too much of a risk to put the NBA out there full time?
You know, a lot of what the NBA do that they let the G League and the WNBA kind of be the guinea pigs and kind of test the market. And, you know, the WNBA has their franchise, the Aces, in Las Vegas. So they've already got a good sample size of what a team in Las Vegas can do, and obviously the support that they get as well as the Golden Knights, the hockey team. So I don't think the NBA wants to get into the gambling field just like everybody else does. Mm-hmm. And I could definitely see Vegas being another spot that they would definitely want to expand to.
I feel like the league that would be – that makes the most sense for, like, your point, though, about the NBA going international is basketball. I mean, basketball is truly the world's game. You know what I mean? There's that, and along with soccer, but, I mean, out of the four major ones in the United States, I say, should say at least. I mean, that's the world's game. It's always made more sense to me that the NBA go abroad again, as especially on the background of what the Raptors just did. You know, than the NFL, which is still really America's sport, you know, but I mean, it's just not everywhere the same way basketball is. You know?
Right. Now, this is
and after definitely after watching that last episode of The Last Dance, you know, that just is where that's where the spark got lit for the NBA all across the world was right then and there.
Sure.
And it's something that I mean, Keith, you keep up with soccer as well. Why does the NBA not do a tiered system like the English Premier League, where you'll have 16 teams in one division, 16 teams in another, and the top two or three teams move up, the top two or three teams and now will move down, and you can put more teams in some of these other markets that you may want to get into. You don't get none the big pie until you get into that bigger pie.
I think we're getting there. I think you know, because of the popularity of the Premier League, the Champions League in soccer, we've heard Adam Silver talk about moving to sort of this kind of format similar to what soccer does. And he kind of introduced this mid-season tournament where they would play for some cup, and would that work? And we've had people say, who would care about the cup? Why would they play for it? Why would the players care for it? Initially, nobody would probably care for it, but over time, you would have to build some sort of incentive, whether the winner gets a draft pick out of it, or maybe if you create a I've heard some scenarios where if you create a point system where every win in the tournament adds on to your regular season win totals. So say you are the Indiana Pacers and your regular season win total is 48, but in the tournament you won four games. Now all of a sudden you're a 52 win team. So now all of a sudden those games matter. So I think the NBA is close to trying to figure out what that could be, but they're definitely going to move towards a mid-season tournament. And I think the ultimate goal I would love to see is having just the best 16 teams in the playoffs, 1 through 16. You could have Portland versus Miami in the first round, and that way we could have two teams in the West in the NBA Finals. Nobody would care as long as we have the two best teams in the NBA Finals.
I like that idea too, man, because I think that, you know, when you talk about them testing the waters with teams in other markets, you know, I looked at what they did with the All-Star game over the last 3 years, and I think that's been one of the best changes to anything in sports. And I think that, you know, what they did with the scoring this year was phenomenal. But the fact that you put the guys out there to pick teams and, you know, I mean, you have more intrigue that way, I think that, you know, that proves that people, you know, the days of, you know, it needing to be Boston versus LA every year, I don't think that means as much. You know, if you got to the point now where you had the Lakers play the Clippers in the finals, people would care just as much and wouldn't really give a damn where those teams were based at, as long as the best teams was playing in the end.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's go into your story though, man. Like, how was your journey? Like, so you started out at SEMO. What is your steps and journey to get to where you are now?
No, we got that right already. You started off at Hazelwood West.
West.
Yeah.
West.
Let's say. It all really began there, man. Like, I've been in sports my whole life. My whole family's in sports. You know, my uncle played baseball at SLU. My dad played baseball growing up at Sumner High. And I grew up around the sport. My grandfather played the Negro League. So baseball and sports have been a part of my life, my entire life. And I grew up wanting to be like Mike, speaking of The Last Dance, and play professional ball. But then once I got to high school, I was like, I need to figure out what I could do outside of sports or outside of the game, but be attached to it. And I always wanted to be a part of professional sports. So back in high school, I knew I wanted to be a sports writer. So I was the sports editor of our school paper.
Losses Hazelwood West was taken back in the day.
Yeah, man. Actually, I will say, my junior senior basketball team, we beat East, we beat Central.
Oh, y'all beat East and
lost to McCool North.
Your senior?
Yeah, we beat Central. We were never good at football, but we beat Central our senior year. So
what year did you come out?
2001.
Okay, 2001. Okay.
Oh, you was out there with Brian Lyles.
Yeah, B Lies is my guy. So our senior team, we were together all 4 years. So junior year, it was 11 juniors and one senior. And then senior year, the whole squad was all seniors, 12 seniors all on the team.
I feel bad for O2.
For real.
That's like going to Kentucky now or something.
No, that's like Wisconsin. That's like Wisconsin. Where everybody
is. Yeah, yeah,
that's real. That's for real.
But yeah, so I wanted to be a sport. I know I wanted to be a sports writer. Did some internships and stuff even in high school back then. I knew Mizzou was the school, and Northwestern were the two schools near us to go for that. And I just knew the competition there would be crazy. That's why I chose SEMO. SEMO was a little, you know, nobody really knows about it down in the Boot Hill, about 10,000 students, but it really gave me an opportunity to do whatever I wanted. And so down in SEMO, I was the sports editor for the Capitol Hill Era, the school newspaper down there as well. So continued my writing skills, did some writing for the Southeast Missourian down there. And it wasn't until my senior year of college where I had to do an internship for a television class. I did the internship at KSDK in St. Louis. That's when I got introduced to television. I had no introduction to television prior to that, really, besides one class my senior year. And that's when I fell in love with it. And I've been in television ever since. I basically taught myself with the help of some of the other producers there how to produce a show, how to time a show, how to work behind the scenes in a TV studio. That was right when, and Matt, you might remember this, right when Channel 5 had Cardinal games on Sundays.
Yeah.
This is like 08, 09, something like that. You know, we did pre and post shows. We had Sunday Night Sports Plus. And I was just a production assistant at the time, but I kept my foot in the sports office and was helping them with whatever they needed and started producing segments on the pregame show. And then those segments grew to doing the whole show. And then same thing for Sports Plus. And I was at KSDK for 6 years. Was on the job hunt just to get out of St. Louis because I was behind two senior producers at KSDK. I was never going to move up. And I just started putting jobs in, and being a basketball fan inside the NBA on TNT was always my favorite. Applied to TNT in 2012, and the rest is history, man. I've been down here in Atlanta since 2012, going on 8 years next month. And, you know, it's been a dream of mine, really. Inside the NBA, like I said, it's the dream job for me. It's a show I grew up watching, and now I'm actually a part of it every week. And now I just get paid to watch NBA and talk about it. And it doesn't feel like work.
And I feel like the step that you talked about there with, you know, KSDK and having to come up through there is that's something a lot of people don't realize about most of the people that you see that are making it over and doing those things. That is hard work. You know, the people that you see on the news, a lot of them will be out, you know, with the hand cam doing what they have to do in order to get footage and do that work. That is a lot of work you have to put in order to get there. So by the time that you get to a point where you're going on to something like a TNT or going on to an NBA entertainment or something like that, you have done a ton more jobs than you ever signed up for in the first place in the job that you had. So like, what were some of the things that, you know, when you got to KSDK and you were, you know, getting into that, because it sounds like it was a pretty quick turn into the AV side as opposed to just doing the writing. What were some of the things that you picked up on there pretty quick that you were like, I'm going to need this in order to, you know, survive in this part of the business?
It's really just about attention to detail. And one thing about television is that it's just like being a part of a team. It's just like playing a sport. I play sports all my life. You can't put on a broadcast by yourself. Right. Every single person has to do their job to make the broadcast happen. And so I just realized real quickly, man, that like, I have to make sure that my job is buttoned up. And once I make sure my job is buttoned up, then I can be the good teammate and help out others wherever they need help in. And those are the same skill sets that I brought from KSDK to TNT. When we're doing a live game and it's the fourth quarter and it's the Eastern Conference Finals and we're doing Miami versus Indiana and it's game seven, like I'm looking out for myself, but I'm being the team player looking out for everybody in that production truck, making sure that, talking to the PAs, you misspell somebody's name right there, or you got an extra character right there. You don't want that to go out on live television. It's that it's that team atmosphere that you kind of really learn. And either you're going to be a team player, just like in sports, either you're a team player and you can adapt to that, or you go out here hero balling thinking it's all about you, and then that's where you feel yourself on the outside looking in.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to work out with this show, but I just don't know if it's ever going to quite get there or not. I don't know. We'll figure it out one
Matt,
way
Matt
or another.
Matt knows who he is. He, you know, that's what it is. Matt knows he's definitely the Kobe of this situation.
I see myself as more of like a James Harden. I pass the ball a little bit, you know, I move it around.
you get
it's not glitz and glamour though. That's one thing I tell college students all the time. Like, you gotta be willing to get down and do the dirty work. So When I got hired, I was a sports intern at KCK, got hired as a production assistant right after that, and I was a production assistant for Today in St. Louis, the morning show. Mm-hmm. So that was me waking up at 3:30 every morning and being in the office by 4:00. To work the 5 a.m. news, 6 a.m. news, the 10 a.m. news, the noon news. I was there from 4 a.m. to about noon or 1 p.m. Monday through Friday.
3:30.
I tell you what, man, I did pre morning drive radio, meaning I was in the 5 to 7 slot, which is I'm getting that alarm at that 3:30, at 4:00, and you just live a different life, man, when you're doing that. Like, you just, your day moves different, your clock moves different. It's getting to be like 7:00. You like, all right, it's about done for me that day. I mean, moving to that morning drive and getting into that 7 to 10 space is almost like getting promoted to a lower level of heaven.
For sure.
Get out that first drive, man. Yeah, it's tough. And that's the thing that I talk to guys about all the time. And D, man, you can talk about, you know, it's like when people ask about, you know, I'm going to do a podcast or do something like that, or I want to get in the radio, I want to get in the TV. I say, yeah, I'm sure you do. But this is what it's really about, though. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not just getting on there and just talking about whatever. You got to know all of these different things. You got to truly study this industry and truly, you know, be a student of it more so. And I think that a lot of people's success happens to be the people that they get a chance to work underneath, too. And I know, Keith, that you got a great opportunity to work with some true pros that have traveled the road here in St. Louis and, you know, set you up for that ramp to go there.
Yeah, Rennie Knott in St. Louis, Frank Cusimano, those are two of my big brothers. Art Holiday, Mike Bush, like some icons that I got to rub shoulders with and basically call friends now. But all four of those guys in particular are four guys I continue to talk to today. And, you know, they set the tone. So Rennie, when he was a sports director at KACK, he's a workaholic. He still is. So He would be there at noon. He doesn't leave till 11. He would go out and shoot his own stuff. Anytime I think, oh, it's a slow sports day, Rennie's going to be in the office chilling. Nope, he's grabbing the camera, going to some high school, shooting some wrestling feature for the news. Like, he constantly – and when you have people that you look up to who work in that like that, that just pushes – at least for me, this just pushes me even harder to kind of match their energy, because I feel like I don't want to let them down.
I hear that.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I always think about people are like, yo, man, you need to do the podcast. And I'm like, man, look, man, this is like kind of like being the road warrior on Mad Max. You know, like, literally, I've been on a road travel for a long time. Like, all right, man. Like, I try to keep people's spirits up. Like, dude, man, I've been through a whole bunch of battles. You seen my previous three movies. You know, like, what I've been through. You saw Return to Thunderdome. You saw it. I had to go through a Tina Turner, like, and you just want to come out here on this road. You need to stay with the other children and with the feral. Remember the feral children with the Return to Thunderdome, where all those kids thought it was gonna be better being out, going out on the road. Like, no, y'all need to stay in this little paradise y'all have. Stay there. It's fine where you at.
I tell people when they talk about podcasting all the time, I say, find out if you really want a podcast. Do a 40-minute podcast on your own. If you can sit there and talk for 40 minutes on your own about anything, you truly want to do it. Let's go from there. We'll figure out what
to do. If you interested and you think you're interested, like, listen to yourself is the great.
Yes, Murphy I was going to say that. Listen to yourself.
As Murphy Lee said, put the top 5 songs in your song in the middle of it. If you can't tell the difference between them all flowing, then you ready to go.
Right, real talk. So all right, man. So you get to you get down to TNT. Yo, what's that world like? I mean, I know that's another step at that point.
Yeah, so get down to TNT, and it's night and day, going from local news to now national sports network, or national network. Yeah, it's crazy. And you know, I started in June, so I had a little grace period to kind of learn the ropes. And then basketball season hits, and I'm in the studio, and there's Charles, and there's Shaq. Oh, snap, that's EJ. That's Ernie Johnson. Like for me, that was, like, it took a while for me to be like, man, like, not to so be
you,
starstruck.
Like, you being just gassed up, like, that's the gassed up moment where you like, hold on, man, I'm not here for real, right?
Like, yes, yes. And now I take it for granted, but, like, even then when I was going out and I was doing games and we have our breakfast meetings and I'm sitting next to Chris Webber or I'm Reggie Miller and me and him, and we're arguing about, just like we normally would at the barbershop, about who's better, MJ, LeBron, or whatever. Like, mm-hmm. like, you know, if you're a hoop head or just in the sports, you can't imagine the type of experience that it is. And so I tell people all the time, like, I can't take it for granted because, you know, I know what it means to be here. The work environment was super cool, super laid back, and I just wanted to put my stamp down and make sure that, you know, whatever happens, that I'm here to stay. And so whatever show I was on, whatever production I was on, I went all out. I was going early, staying late, and I was telling, you know, one of my boss was telling me, you want to make sure that whatever show you're on, whatever game you're on, that the producers want you for that game. So when they have their producer meeting and they're going over scheduling and they're trying to figure out who's going to do what and for the assignments, you want people saying, you want people fighting over you for that, for that spot. So I was like, all right. And that's basically what I did. I made sure I was being that team player. And then it got to a point where the producers, multiple producers wanted me on their game for various reasons and so on their shows. And so I kind of take that same aspect now, man. And you know, I, being down here, I've worked NBA finals. I've worked conference finals. I've traveled to every NBA city. Before I came to Atlanta, I really didn't travel that much. But I've been to every NBA city now multiple times. I had to work, had the likes of work with like Shaq, Charles, EJ, obviously other guys inside the NBA, but even Kevin Garnett, he and I, you know, did Area 21 together. KG is like a friend of mine now, and like I said, it's just a different type of experience where we're real laid back, we're almost like a family, we look out for each other, and I couldn't ask for anything better.
So what is a friendship with Kevin Garnett like? Because we was talking about KG on the show a couple shows ago when he came out, he said, it's not gonna be no peace with me and the Timberwolves. I say, I love how this dude is still the same dude that I saw play in the McDonald's game in 95 in St. Louis. Yes. at the Keel. I'm like, this yes. dude has kept it authentic for like 2.5 decades, man. So it's like, KG got to be a cat that's just him all the way through like that.
He doesn't know any other way to be. He is 110% every single time. So when KG started with us, it was crazy because he had just retired. And he had basically stepped off the court and straight into a TV studio. And he had never done television before, but we had just hired him. And we sold him on doing this show where he was going to be watching games and having guests. And it was a new type of experiment that we were doing for some of our digital platforms and social platforms. And they learned pretty quickly that they couldn't just have anybody with KG. Right. He a real right. one. He a real one. So he and I, you know, we didn't bump heads at all, but it was like some of those things where you just get kind of used to your talent kind of behaving a certain way. Mm-hmm. Not with this dude, man. He thought it was the locker room. So he was covered, like, we had a cuss button for the show. It was a real cuss button because we knew every other word was gonna be some MF.
Dump button that you had, and you just had to keep your finger on the trigger at all times. Like,
we had it right next to him. So anytime on the set. So anytime. Anything, matter of fact, hold on. Matter of fact, anytime he wanted to, it's from our old set right here.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yep,
I remember it.
the cuss button. Anytime that he wanted to, he felt that he was about to say something, he just pressed down on that. It muted his mic. It muted his guest mic, so it didn't bleed through there. And yeah, sometimes he would be on there just holding it, just. the whole time.
I had a one of my good friends was been in NHL for 10 years, and we're on radio, so we had a 5-second delay, and I would just sit next to him because we didn't have that. I would just hit him in his leg. I just say, all right, you're getting close, or you just did it. He'd just be like, my bad, and then get it. But yeah, that's I always looked at Area 21. I'm like, yo, this is like Rap City the basement on the basketball, yo. And then when I found out that you was behind it, I was like, everything makes sense now. This is like everything came together.
Yeah, it was cool. Like we had all kind of guests come through: Randy Moss, Ray Lewis. The best show we ever did was the Legend Show, where we had Lisa Leslie, Dr. J, George Gervin, Bernard King, Oscar Robertson all come in Atlanta and be on the show with KG. And that was cool because once they got to Atlanta and to Turner, we tried to do the whole car wash thing where we had Dr. J go do this for social and Lisa come over here and do this. And they all were like, nah, we just here to talk to Kev. Like, we don't want to do nothing else.
Right.
We just here to talk to Kevin. And that was cool. So he held clout like that. Like, besides, after Kobe for that generation, KG was the next one that was a lot of people's favorite players.
Is AI next?
AI is up there probably. But I don't consider AI, because AI retired long before they did.
Yeah.
I guess AI is kind of in that class too.
They were all kind of the folks that took that stick when Jordan left. You know what I'm saying? And it felt like it kind of just went in a lot of different directions. Like a certain type of cat like Kobe, a certain type of cat like AI, a certain type of cat like Garnett. You know, you had regional folks like the Spurs and all that stuff. The NBA was really an interest. You still have Vince Carter then. Vince Carter was crazy popular at that point. It was, that's an interesting call.
I mean, Allen Iverson has been the most biggest thing for the NBA. He changed the complexion of the NBA.
Yeah.
I think more than any other player. And I'm not talking about on the court.
For sure.
The way that they conduct everything now is because of Allen Iverson. Cats wearing braids and wave caps and chains to their rookie.
That's why they had the dress code in.
Yeah.
Because of Allen Iverson.
That's why they had AI had cats in high school getting tats. Like the whole game changed like all the way over when AI came through. With KG, man, did you see him kind of getting into some of the things he's interested in now? Like the Uncut Gems thing, which just kind of came out of left field for me. But I was just like, yo, KG really got a plan here. You know what I'm saying? About how he's going to go about this.
Yeah, he was with us when he was shooting that movie. I didn't realize it was Uncut Gems. I just know when we were trying to book him, he was like, I'm not available. I'm shooting a movie with Adam Sandler.
What are you doing? Say that again.
right. But he's always thought about life after basketball. He's always been about owning his own thing, which is part of the reason why he's not on good terms right now with the folks in Minnesota, because he was hoping to get a piece of some of that ownership, and I think was promised some things, and once some things happened, they kind of fell through. KG is very loyal, but you have to break down that barrier. You got to get through that tough skin of his. But once you're into his inner circle, you're good. And so it took me, he was with us for 3 seasons. The entire first season was kind of a roller coaster ride with him, because we didn't know what we were going to get week in, week out. But after that first season, and he and another one of my coworkers got into that inner circle of his, we were good. Anytime we need him for anything, I call him, or he likes the voice note stuff. So we text all the time, or voice notes, or, he knows when my kids' birthdays are. He'll send him a little message or whatever. Like, he's a really good dude, real good friend, but you gotta knock down that hard shell to get there.
Because, he was one of the original. He was the OG high school pro guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, how long have people been chasing him around, wanting to hop on the hitch they wagon to his? You know what I mean? You can't just have folks around you any type of way like that. And KG definitely got that authenticness to him in that way, man. So before we switch to I got questions. I absolutely have to ask about Chuck and Shaq and all of them. What'd you add? Because I know you stirring on something there, because KG, like, if you went to the NBA, I would feel like you would be a Kevin Garnett type of cat if you went to the league like that yourself.
Why would I be KG though?
It's hard to imagine you like 6'11", but still, I'm I'm trying to picture it because
I don't know if I would be destined there like KG. I'd probably be more like a maybe it is KG, man. Now you know, I never like thought of it like that.
More like a Mike Dunleavy Jr. or
I wouldn't be Ray Allen getting caught up in DMs either.
No. Don't do that. Yo, that's one of the
that mystery is still unsolved. That's still unsolved mysteries, right?
I'm gonna figure this out. Next show, I'm gonna bring you some people together. This is who your career could have looked like. Only gonna be cats that got drafted from '95 on, though. Okay. Like, I'm not gonna give you like Bernard King or nothing like that.
No, I'm fine.
Nobody from back in the day.
But what's so, I wanted to ask you, what's your best and worst cities that you've been to, NBA city?
The old debate. Let's see where it goes.
This is a PG-rated edition. But I'm just saying, you know, for the overall, you know, experience, is the great Jalen Rose champagne in a campaign.
The best, I mean, you know, it's hard to beat L.A. and Miami. Like, take your pick. For that, especially, you know, Miami on a January Thursday night when, you know, we're doing the Heat versus whoever and you're trying to get out the cold. Yeah, you want to go to Miami for a Thursday night game and extend that to the weekend. So it's Miami and L.A. are tough to beat as far as best. The worst for me, easily, Oklahoma City.
Salt Lake City?
Oklahoma City, OKC.
No, I'm saying Salt Lake City
isn't bad. It's not terrible.
I had a bad experience the only time I stopped through Salt Lake City, and I never even left the airport. I stopped through Salt Lake City one time leaving Vegas, and I was just in that leaving Vegas mindset, and I'm looking for just some type of sustenance just to keep me alive. And, like, all they had in the airport was, like, wrapped up ham sandwiches and, like, chicken salad. I was like, I got to get the hell out of here. Salt Lake City is my last place pro city.
Yeah, Salt Lake City isn't terrible. I just have spent a lot more time at OKC because when KD was there and Russ, like, we were constantly there every year doing conference finals and doing game after game after game. So I've spent – and my birthday always falls during conference finals. So I've spent two birthdays in OKC.
They got one black club too. That's the crazy thing. They got one black club.
Yes. And you go in there and say, oh, that's Jeremy Lamb. Oh, that's Reggie Jackson. Everybody come to this spot because this is the only spot in Bricktown to go to. And the underrated.
That was my next question. What's the most underrated?
Underrated is Portland.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I've heard dope things about Portland.
Chill. I love going to Portland outside of, we go to Nike and Adidas up there when we're up there. But outside of that, Portland itself is just a real cool, chill, great Northwest city, man. It's a real underrated city.
One of my frat brothers lives up there in Portland right now. He's up there doing his medical thing, but he's just like, man, this is like super relaxed. Like he's like my feng shui is in a good spot up there. Now he's also getting ready to move to Houston, so I feel like he might be having some of that departure happiness. But that's neither here nor there. Yeah,
Portland. Because it's gonna get real crazy for him when he find out where HK is at.
Houston's got to be one of those cities. You talk about Jalen Rose. I remember he was on Bill Simmons thing saying Houston's one of them cities where you know somebody went there the night before when you play them. If they leave in Houston and they come to play them, you know that you want to play somebody after they play.
Didn't James Worthy get jammed up down there too?
Hey, the James Worthy. Speaking real quick about the Last Dance, I had to go back and watch the Bad Boys on ESPN after that, just because I was just like, I need to see the other half of this just to remind myself. And I had completely forgot that James Worthy had to just got destroyed by them cats from Magic. It got hurt back in the day. I was like, James Worthy is looking pissed off, man. That's what I've been using this quarantine for. Talking about NBA entertainment, things like that. Like, I know that's ESPN, but I've just been using this to, like, dive deep into, like, all sorts of content and see stuff. Like, ESPN's been running those old fight marathons. And NBA has been showing, you know, the old conference finals and games like that. They got the paywalls down for stuff on all these different sites. Like, it's an awesome time that if you want to go out and check and see all these guys. Like, we talk about KG. Like, KG's our era. But you know what I'm saying? It's like there's a ton of kids right now that did not get to see KG when he was in form and things like that. like you can go back and really check these cats out. And I think that like The Last Dance has been something that's made people have a little bit of that taste for that vintage. And I think that I've always thought that the NBA had way, way, many, many steps ahead of other leagues when it came to showing their old game and not letting you forget the guys that came before, because you got to work hard to find an old NFL game or an old MLB game, but you can find it from the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, NBA has always been about promoting the stars, and, you know, this is – it started with Mike probably started with Magic and Larry, but really Mike took it to a whole nother level. But, yeah, we're constantly on NBA TV just re-airing games. And like you said, for this time now when people have the time at home to kind of watch and get educated about some things, like life existed for some of these kids before Steph Curry and the Warriors. Like,
sure.
Go back and check on some of those 2000 Piston teams with Rasheed and Chauncey and those guys, and go back and look at the Dallas Mavericks or rookie D Wade. Like, this league has definitely grown to a great spot, and it's a great time for people to learn about it.
And like, and the thing I love about on the NBA side is that you can go back and see like the We Believe Warriors, or you can go see them dope squads, or go see, if you want to go even further back, like go see Sean Kemp and Gary Payton and them when they was like, even back in the day when they was pushing the Suns before they got to Jordan. Yep. Like, there's so many eras in the NBA. Like, people, one of the things about the NBA is that they always say it's a league that's run by dynasties. And I think that to a certain extent that's true, because one player can make a bigger difference in where the sport goes. But I also think that there's always a lot of other subplots that are happening in the league. And there's so many games to watch. Like, there's nothing like League Pass. There's nothing like League Pass, because there's no such thing as an NBA matchup where you're not going to see at least one really, really good, if not great player on the court. Just can't happen.
And that's one of the things that kind of, like, is kind of the good and the bad. You know, there's been a lot of talk that NBA Twitter and the story around the game have maybe overtaken what is actually going on the court. So, you know, the next day something happens and you got First Take, Undisputed, and all these talking head shows that are dissecting a quote that somebody said after the game. They're taking away the actual product on the court.
Right.
And a lot of times, you know, that's what we're trying to get back to, is people actually watching the games, because people aren't really watching games. When we grew up, and I'm sounding old, back in my day. But
we there, bro.
We are there. But the NBA on NBC, like, that was Sunday afternoon. So I just remember being at my grandma's house with my uncle and my dad watching Mike versus Reggie. You know, we didn't have it on every single night. I couldn't get the highlights the next day, a House of Highlights on Instagram, to be able to give me a recap. Like, we actually had to go over and watch the game. Or then, if you didn't catch the game, stay up to watch SportsCenter to see your highlight. I think that's kind of what's been missing. It's like the talk around the game has kind of overtaken what's going on the court.
Well, I realize how lucky we were in St. Louis as a market that didn't have a NBA team, but we did have WGN. So I got to watch the Bulls like they were my own team. Like,
and TBS to watch the Hawks.
Exactly. Like, that was incredibly good. You talk about TBS. I mean, I got to watch that just before. Oh, damn, it was the same time. Those great Braves teams at the same time. Now, they was a thorn in our ass in St. Louis. But, you know, hell, I mean, any night of the week you turn on, you could see Greg Maddux or see Tom Glavine or somebody like that. Then you get to see Neek and all of them and Plastic Man. It's dope like that, man. The NBA certainly has a leg up, like, in that way. One question I have for you, man, before, again, you know, I hate to keep dropping teases and stuff like that. We are going to talk about inside the NBA. But, like, where you're at now and, like, where you see maybe for the NBA, of course, but just for sports in general, what's next for broadcast? You know, like, where is that at? Because I feel like there's more tools at our disposal right now to be able to take in sport. And you talked about a few of them right there. But what's next for the broadcast experience that, you know, maybe something that you see that could be coming along?
Yeah, we're trying to figure it out with every game, with every season. We're trying to introduce new things that to enhance the broadcast. We work with VR and Intel to bring virtual reality into it. So some of our games, you could put on the goggles and do the VR experience. We're always trying to figure out how to get game more access, whether that's miking the players or putting the microphone in the locker room or behind the bench. Like, we're constantly working with the NBA and MLB, all these sports leagues, trying to figure out how to enhance it.
Now, did you get to peep any XFL broadcast?
Yeah.
What did you think about that? Because I think that was a completely different experience, you know, than what it was.
It was cool. And that was one of the things, because they own the league and they own the rights, like they didn't have to work with the NFL on anything. They were just starting out brand new and trying to build an audience. Well, how can you build an audience? We have to make it different. So having the play calling, you know, the play calling audio come through the television, and have the camera on the micro, or have the camera on the field inside the huddles, having the camera inside the locker room at halftime. Like, those are all things that you don't see on a traditional broadcast. And I think those are some of the stuff that they implemented within their broadcast. You'll see the NFL and probably some college basketball or football as well implement in their broadcast, because some stuff is an easy transition to do. And then some stuff you have to work with the Players Association and all that. But I think we're getting to that point where people want access and people want to be able to say, I'm seeing something unique with this experience. It's not just throwing the game on the screen and having people watch for 2-3 hours, because we're past that. We have to give them a reason to want to tune in and giving them something to do.
Well, I tell you what, the Battlehawks was a good look for St. Louis, man. It was a dope experience in the dome down there. It was something brand new.
Did y'all get one or two games?
I think they got two. I think they got two in down here before it went, because I think they started on the road. They went back. Their last game was on the road, but they got two in down here. And I went to the second one, and it was a vibe, man. Like, they were talking about the week that everything got canceled. They were talking about opening up the top of the dome, because it was going to be able to support it. So that was tough, man, because I think they was really about to really show what St. Louis had to offer in that.
Well, hopefully y'all take that energy from the Battlehawks and bring it over to the soccer team. Because I'm telling you, like, down here in Atlanta, when Atlanta got their MLS team, people were like, Atlanta, like, you know, people in Atlanta, they go to no soccer game. And I tell you, I'm close to the situation, obviously, because my little cousin plays for the squad, so I'm at every game. But, man, it's 40, 50, 60,000 people. Sometimes they open up the whole thing. It's 70,000 people in there watching soccer. And you wouldn't have thought that for Atlanta to be, you know, 70,000 people every single game. But,
but St. Louis should have been at a soccer team, though. That's the thing. St. Louis should have been at a soccer team.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, one of the best soccer cities, high school-wise, in the country.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I expect you all to have that same support, especially the younger demographic. But hopefully that energy and that love that they and that energy that they have for the Battlehawks, they bring that over to STLFC or whoever the name is.
The location is great too, so it's kind of it's at the end of downtown, so it's going to be a little bit more open, and hopefully some bars and things like that open up a little bit more around that area, you know, and kind of blow that area up a little bit more.
Yeah.
That's Daryl's great hope for me, is that the MLS brings me to soccer, because
I've been trying to get him on soccer for a long time, man.
I played 1,000 years ago, but I just haven't. It's hard for me to form an attachment to a team, and it's hard
choose
for me to
a
get
team in the Premier League. I keep just choose but, one.
But how? Like, that's the thing. Just, like, really, I don't know what to care about.
Just close your eyes when they just go on ESPN, and it is the first team that's on the soccer page. That's your
no, I'm not doing that, because that could be like if you told me to watch the NBA, and it's just like, oh, yo.
No. It's only going to be like 5 or 6 teams on that front page. So and then I – better chance. It ain't
and then
like
I become a post-LeBron Cavs fan. Like, this is
No, but see, English Premier League soccer, and like, this soccer period is very, very, very – way more about like the top 6-7 teams. Like, you ain't gonna see them other teams unless they play in one of the top 6-7 teams. So you don't have to get a bad draw.
So while we on soccer, I'm gonna ask both of y'all. Are y'all the only two brothers playing soccer on PlayStation against each other, or the other brother?
Like, that's what it seems like.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. We put the ass out there, like, yo, where everybody at playing FIFA?
Yeah, just trying to make fun of us. Like, no, we don't have Madden.
We got crickets, bro.
Hey, it's up next for me in the next game to get that I haven't played before. That's
it's
maybe that
addictive, man. Because it's you know, more people play that online than any other game.
Oh, I believe it. It's the most popular sport in the world. Like, that's probably the one that I would think would have the service crash before any of them would have been.
Oh, their service crash all the time, too.
Yeah, I bet. It's in there. So, Keith, man, before we let you get out of here, man, I got to ask you, man. I need some stories from the set of, I think, without a doubt, the greatest post-game, pre-game. It's transcended a part of the game.
I mean,
the greatest sports commentary program of all time inside the NBA. Like, once you got there and got comfortable and you were feeling like, all right, I got to grasp on this, I got to feel like, you know, relationships and things started to bloom from there for you as well.
Yeah, man, and you start to learn what everybody does, and start to learn how we do things, and you know, one of the things that we do, it's not really a secret anymore, it's online sharing, but you know, we have a meeting before the show every Thursday, the whole production crew, and the only person that's there from the set is EJ, Shaq, yeah. Charles, Kenny. They arrive to the studio around 7:30, and we're on at 8. They know what teams are playing that night, and they all generically kind of follow the league, so they know kind of what to talk about. But only EJ is there in the meeting to kind of be like, okay, for this gag, we're gonna do this, and you know, so that's basically how it happens, man. Like that week will be like, all right, EJ's Nito Stat of the Night. How can we make fun of Chuck this week? And basically anything goes, man. Like. And that's a great thing about these guys is that they know that they're going to get made fun of and they don't care. Like they're right. Part of the joke and they crack back at it. And even times when we mess up on air and we throw up a wrong graphic or do something that messes up the segment, the crew will make fun of ourselves. So the producer or will throw up a picture of them, they'll crack on the producer or, you know, it's something that, it's not like any other television. It's not buttoned up like you might see on other broadcasts. And it definitely has set the tone for what you're starting to see on a lot of sports broadcasts is that people are starting to get a little loose and put memes up and tweets and make fun of the people sending in the tweets. Like whenever Shaq says your mama on somebody's joke, like, somebody tweets at him, he just says, your mama. Like, your mama is the oldest joke in the book, but it's just funny because it's Shaq talking about somebody's mama that he definitely don't know.
You hear Shaq saying it, and you see where that's going already. I love how it's always been a show that feels like it's true to itself. And I think mm-hmm. that to your point, man, when you're creating any type of media or you're doing anything, like, you know, the thing you said about if you got 5 albums and if you know the song that's yours in it, you're probably doing it right. Be who you are, man. And sometimes you got to just keep on working to be who you are. Like, them guys have been together for a long, long time.
Yeah. You know? I mean, Shaq is already over 10 years now. I think Shaq is pushing like 12 or 13 years. And he still feels like he's new to this thing, you know, but right. he's not. He got a decade in. And, you know, everything, it's funny how stuff just flows from show to show. One of my favorite stories is like, it was something going on where, you know, Chris Webber and Kenny had some sort of competition, some bet. And then that spilled over on the show. Chris was like, you know, I can play baseball better than you. I can do this better than you. And so we had a competition and we went over across the street to Georgia Tech and we had these dudes kick soccer balls into the net. We had these dudes try to hit a baseball. Who could throw the football the furthest? And see these professional basketball players try to kick a soccer ball. I mean, I don't know if y'all have seen Kenny ever try to kick a ball, but you would be embarrassed for him for the way he tries to kick a ball. And we've all seen Chuck's golf swing. It's just, you know, like, so that turned into a race. And so, you know, we had EJ, Shaq, Chuck, and Kenny, and Webb all race each other 100 yards and see who would win. And it came down to the wire, and Kenny thought he was winning. He started celebrating before he crossed the finish line, and Chris Webber reached out and hit the tape with his hand. He declared himself the winner, and that's how Run Through the Tape started. Like, you just got to run through the tape. Kenny, run through the tape.
Right.
So it's just that's basically how the show is, man. Like, we have a format of things that we know we want to talk about, but anything goes. We can say, hey, tonight is Warriors Cavs. We're going to talk about this, this, and this. But if Chuck comes on there at the start of the show and says, oh, I want to talk about Trump, I was like, all right, we can throw this all out the window. What's on your mind, Chuck? And we got to go from there, man.
It's a secret skill that not a lot of people know how hard it can be to reel athletes into being the people that talk about athletes, not being the ones talked about. That takes a level of patience, and it takes a level of teaching that I think that's like the understated skill of a great producer is being able to put these guys into the seat that they've never been in before, but they most certainly got a thought about what it's supposed to be. And then on top of that, ideas about what they want it to be too.
Yeah. And they don't hold back. Like, you know, JaVale McGee was on Shaq and the Fool like every week. And then Shaq was getting on them every week about being on Shaq and the Fool. You know, this whole thing with Chuck and Draymond, you know, Chuck has turned himself because he's been in this game for closing in on 25, 30 years, he's turned into the TV guy now. And people forget how bad he was on the court. And that's something that was reminded of us on this last dance episode this past weekend. Like, Chuck was an MVP. He took Mike to 6 games in the finals. Like, he was a dog. And so some of these people have to be reminded that Chuck ain't just – he's not just a TV guy talking about he doesn't like these players. He was a real dude.
He's a top 5 power forward all time. We were talking about Chuck right before that episode, and I said, hey, I need y'all to know something. Chuck averaged a double-double for 15 years.
Yeah, and was 6'4". Doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, do you work on the NCAA when they do the NCAA tournament on that side?
So we all work on everything. So I do baseball, I do NBA, NCAA March Madness is a crazy time for us.
How different is that experience with NCAA side of it than NBA?
Man, it's on both the studio. I've done the studio and the game side, and they're both just easily as crazy. So your day starts at you're there at 7 a.m., 8 a.m. probably. And the first games, you're on the air at noon, and you're on the air from noon till 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And what's so funny is that basically, like, man, you probably say the same thing. Like, Charles and them, they don't keep up with college basketball, so they're basically like everybody else that don't keep up with college basketball. Like, I mean, I remember St. John's being good, so I guess I thought they was going to be good. I saw one dude average 28. On the squad, and that's what I went with.
But he talking about Chris Mullins still.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the thing, though. But Charles.
One dude that was dope from St. John's.
Eric
Guarte. Felipe Lopez.
Felipe Lopez.
Lopez. He think he's still in the squad.
But Charles and Kenny, so, you know, the March Madness is with partners with CBS on that.
Right.
So Charles and Kenny are in New York in their studio. They're not working the same schedule we're working. Right. We're in Atlanta working a Dove, so like, and we're bouncing from network to network. So we could be on, we could start the day on True TV, and as soon as we get True TV off and going, then we're on TBS, then we're on TNT, then we're doing halftime for True TV. Oh, this game is over. We're gonna fill the time here on TBS until those games start. So it's just a crazy work environment. You're on the edge. Just like the people watching at home, you're on edge for every single game. And we don't know the players either. Right. We're at TNT. We do NBA all year. The only time we do college basketball is in March. So we literally don't know these players at all.
But so between pro basketball, college basketball, and then MLB, you know, do you have anything to do with golf at all there too?
Yeah, so we did this would be our first year not doing the PGA Championship. We had the PGA Championship for the past 15 years.
Yeah, I thought golf was in there too. What's the hardest thing to shoot? Like, what's the hardest to set up a production around between those?
Basketball is tough, and baseball. Baseball has its moments. So with baseball, you know, there's 3 outs. You know, there's 3 strikes. There's time in between each pitch to kind of reset and do it again. The thing that makes baseball tough is that you don't know where the hit is coming. So all of a sudden, you can get the generic fly ball to center, or you can get the bases loaded. He hits one in the corner in right field, and he's clearing the bases, and you're trying to cover all that at once.
So that
can be tough. But you know, okay, it's 2 outs. It's 2 strikes. You know, this next strike or this next fly ball, the inning's over. We can do this again. Basketball is tough because you're going up and down and you have no clue what's coming next. You're prepared to be able to talk about whatever, but you don't know when the basket's coming. You don't know when the foul's coming, when the injury's coming, when the substitutions are coming. So basketball is definitely the toughest just because you have no idea what's coming next.
I would feel like that shot where you're trying to find that golf ball and somebody has hit the golf ball and has had no clue of where it's gone, and most of the time it's not going to where I intended for it to. It would be just incredibly hard. Like, you see them hit, and then it's just like, oh, where's it at? I'm just like, I don't even know what I'm looking at on TV, let alone being the camera guy.
The good thing about golf that is that you will never know at home, but the majority of golf that you see, the action isn't live. Most of it is off of tape. Like, it might have just happened, but for that very reason, you know, it gets, that white ball gets lost in the cloud. they can be like, okay, well, we won't take Tiger's tee shot off of 15. We'll just take him in the fairway off of that hole or whatever. So the majority of it is off tape until you get down to Sunday, and it's only down to two or three golfers, and every single shot from that point is live. But for the majority of tournaments, it's all off of tape, like moments ago.
I'm still trying to figure out what's harder, trying to hit a golf ball straight, watch where it goes, or trying to figure out what I'm going to say that's going to upset my lady. I don't know. They're about here.
I don't think you're ever going to win either one, man. I don't know.
One of the last things I want to ask you, man, was is that so coming back into sports now on the other half of this pandemic or whatever things are going to look like, what do you think is going to change with the broadcast? You know, what would you foresee? You know, it looks like we're moving to a place where there's going to be games are held without fans, and it's going to be a different, you know, environment. How do you foresee that being accomplished? And could you just kind of give people kind of an idea about what it means to actually have a broadcast team be at a game, and what that impacts from some of the, you know, the numbers of people that you can only have in a place right now?
Yeah. So for a typical NBA game, it doesn't matter the arena, you would probably have 70 for a TNT and ESPN. We would probably have between 90 and 120 people working just for that broadcast. And that's from camera guys, that's from utility workers who are helping, you know, run all the cables. Mm-hmm. That's from people in the truck, producers, engineers, stat guys. So it's a pretty big deal, the bigger the game, especially that around this time would be playoffs. You definitely would have about 75 people or so. But that alone would have to be scaled down quite a bit. We probably, from a TNT perspective, calling those games, you probably wouldn't have the crew actually on site. So we would figure out a way to have all the cameras fed back through satellite or whatever back to Atlanta, and having that crew in Atlanta cut all the cameras and produce the game out of Atlanta. So that'll cut down on some of that. But some people are just going to have to be out there. You're going to have some camera guys, some audio guys with microphones, but the bare minimum of that. And so when you talk about games without fans, which I think is going to be across the board for all sports, at least for the rest of this year, when and if they ever come back, you're talking about, like, you know, maybe an NBA broadcast could look something like a summer league broadcast where it's like five cameras. Like, you have one on each baseline. You have the main game camera. You have one camera that kind of ISOs certain players or coaches, and maybe one other camera. But it's very, very scaled down crew. The announcers wouldn't be there. We wouldn't fly Marv, who's pushing 80. We wouldn't fly him anywhere to call the game. So he would most likely be doing it out of his home. And it would be a unique experience. As far as the guys on the court, I think from that perspective, it's going to be awesome because the crowd and the ambiance of the arena usually drowns out all the trash talking that's going on. But no crowd there and dead air, we're going to hear some stuff. we're going to hear some stuff that we haven't been able to hear before.
God, why aren't the Warriors in the playoffs this year? I need Draymond. They got to get Draymond on a team somehow. I need him playing.
Yeah, so speaking of KG, good guy. Can you imagine KG in that atmosphere? Like,
no, I mean, it is like KG. Look here, there's gonna be a lot of children listening.
He gets parental advisories. I'm sorry, there's just no other way to.
He
got to
wear a COVID mask. He got to wear a mask.
Imagine if you would have got a chance to hear Kobe or Mike in that drowned out, you know, knowing for environment sure. like that. Oh my God!
For sure.
Oh my God!
So Keith, what you thinking about this Michael Jordan documentary so far, man?
I love it. I mean, this is prime our era, the three of us. And, you know, this is really when I fell in love with basketball. You know, especially that 96 to 98 post baseball, Mike. Mm-hmm. That's really when I really got into it. I love that he's doing it. And I love how open he is. He just seems like he's still being petty.
And it's not as scandalous as I thought it was going to be. He's so worried. Like, I don't see anything in there. Like, it's way more scandalous stuff that they passed up that I thought they could have brought up. Like,
well, exactly. there's some things that I think Mike, his, imagine if they was making a documentary about you. There's some parts of my life I ain't revisiting. Right, but, we ain't talking about that on my documentary.
No, I'm fine with that. But him saying that he was scared with how his image is going to look.
Well, like, there's still four episodes to go. Maybe it's all going to hit you in like, man, 7 or 8.
Them years, they didn't pass already.
either that, or Mike just really doesn't know how people's already looking.
That's what I'm just saying. That's what I think it is. I'm like, the scandalous stuff, you didn't pass that in 93.
I'm excited to see what this does for like the documentary culture. You know what I'm saying? Like, people look at this and because, you know, it's just how it works. You know, Mike did something. Mike, for example, Mike made shoes a big deal. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So everybody had them. So, you know, what is this going to do for how LeBron chronicles his career? You know, or what's this going to do for what, you know, KD does or Steph does? Or just, I think it's going to bring out a lot out of a lot of different people. And I think that for some people, it would be a way to learn about some guys that maybe they didn't. Like, Daryl, you talk about me and soccer all the time. I need to watch something like this for Messi or Ronaldo or something, because I just need to get a feel for it.
Just go online and look at, like, the best Ronaldo, like, the number one Ronaldo goal. If you don't get into soccer after that, this dude took
a And the funny lot. Thing is, I've written about him, but I only write about – I write a column every year at Yardbarker about who are the top 30 highest-earning athletes and how they go about doing it. So yeah. I see this dude is getting crazy cake out here. So he got to be doing something right. Him and Messi is getting.
I mean, Messi. Off. I mean, that's arguably who's better, Messi or Ronaldo. I think Ronaldo's stuff is more prettier than Messi's. That's just me.
Yeah.
Messi may be a better, you're better grits and gravy kind of player, but Ronaldo, all his goals are beautiful. Like every one of them. Like if you get see one of his, go look up the number one goal he did in the Champions League. This dude does a bicycle kick off a lob from all the way in the corner.
Who is Ronaldo compared to an NBA player right now? Both of y'all can answer.
But see, Ronaldo's had three different sets of
well,
careers.
Well, that's cool. That even makes it easier to compare them to people. So, like, both of y'all tell me who Messi and Ronaldo are.
He probably is more Kobe, right? Don't you think?
He's like crazy. Yeah, he's Kobe as far as just the greatness of it.
Yeah.
And the.
But he's got more humbler, though, because before he was not humble. Like, he's got more humbler. Like, that's why I'm thinking Kobe, maybe, because he's got a little bit more humbler in his career as it went on.
And you're talking about Ronaldo right now.
Ronaldo,
right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Messi's still an asshole, though. That's the only problem. Like, that's the problem, though. Messi still be talking about, man, I'll still leave. Like, he always, like, threatening them that he going to leave every other week. Like, I still go to transfer. Like,
maybe that's an offline. We'll figure out who he is then.
Yeah, I don't know who Messi could be. Yeah. Messi might be Jordan, honestly.
Hey, pays well to be both of them.
I mean, he's the highest paid player in sports history, right?
No, of any sport or team sport?
Any sport.
He's bigger than Tiger?
Yeah. That's what for his salary for yes. Yeah, dude, go look at how much he makes a year, dog, without endorsements.
It's like, no, I know. I've never done a cumulative. I only do it annual to annual, and I've only been writing the column for like 3 years.
Annually. I'm just going off annually.
Number one in a couple of the last few years has been Floyd.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's true.
Floyd,
yeah.
That's why I'm saying. I'm going to say, wait a minute now. Hold on, because – Floyd did stupid numbers off.
But how much is Floyd spent, though? Like, what is his?
Well, see, I don't know. We can't listen.
Talk about a documentary you want to see.
Oh, wait till that Floyd documentary pops in 10 years. His daughter's got all this drama going on too. That's gonna be a good one.
I saw there's a 30 for 30 coming out about Bruce Lee, and that just got me through the next couple of months because I ain't going nowhere.
That's only gonna be the small one, right? Like that isn't that like the that's gonna be the podcast version, right?
I don't know, but I'm checking it out either way because Bruce Lee is that unique guy. Keith, man, last question for me, man, before we let you ride. Who is a guy that's in the league right now that you think is going to rock a desk one day when they're done playing? Like, who's going to be a guy that's going to come out and be that guy?
Well, Draymond is the easy answer there. So, I mean, they all are – like, there's a bunch of guys who are getting into this media space and are realizing it's not being on camera and being able to talk clearly and – having your thoughts, like, come out your mouth the way that you want it to is not as easy as it seems.
Right.
Draymond, I think, is going to be the next guy that people, that us and TNT, whoever, fight after. And I think he's definitely going to get into TV. But there's going to be some guys like, you know, C.J. McCollum is going to be doing this at some point.
Good call.
J.J. Redick is going to be doing this at some point. Channing Frye works with us.
Okay.
Yeah, he's with us already, so he's great. He's fun to work with. Who else?
There's some guys I could never see doing it, like Russ and Harden.
Yeah, Russ ain't doing it. Russ.
What do you think Steph Curry does?
He's too big.
So he's going to be, I mean, yeah, I guess he, I mean, but after I saw Shaq do it, I was like, I was
Shaq
like,
is
wow.
Shaq is a character.
Though. Yeah, he's a unique. He's a one of one. That's
Steph,
true.
I can't see Steph doing it. I would see Klay doing something like it before Steph.
Really? Wow. Okay.
But.
Definitely not Kawhi.
No, Kawhi.
I think when Kawhi retires, he's going to disappear like Obi-Wan Kenobi. He's just going, that's just it. Gone.
But what was like? I think, and he's probably 10 years more, or at least 10 years from doing it. But I'm excited to see if Brad Beal will get in something like this.
Really?
Every interview I've ever seen him in, he's always he speaks really well. Obviously, he's very smart. I can see him doing something like this. Mm. Dwayne Wade, you know, we got D Wade on TNT, and he's learning. You know, just like anything with reps, you get better. So in year two, he'll be better than he was in year one.
And it's an incredible amount of pressure to come in and be with those guys now, because now what they've got set up, I mean, you even saw it with C-Webb, it took some time. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, you come into what they got now, that's a whole nother thing. That's like going to the league again. You know what I mean?
Right. And they think that because they play that they can easily talk about it, but easily talking about something and knowing something is two different things.
Right.
So – Webb had to learn when he's doing the game, he sees something that happens, he only has 30 seconds to get his thought off because the replay is happening and the action is going on. He can't spend 2 minutes trying to break something down. So right. He had to really learn how to really say what he wanted to say and get it out, get it quick and make it clear. So, but I think Draymond still got a little ways to go before he's retiring. The next guys who are probably close to retirement that I could see jump in, like Iguodala. Vince Carter. Vince Carter, too.
Good call on Iggy. Yeah, Vince for sure. Vince is
Iggy be real good. Yeah, Iggy be real good, actually. Yeah.
I got to check his book out, man. I've heard nothing but great things about that.
Yeah. But, Iguodala's book? He's got a book?
Yeah. So he's talking about a lot of stuff in it, too. So.
Same not, not sports, though. As we're talking, like, tech stuff and, like, business stuff being out in the Bay.
Yeah, he's really teaching. Okay, he's on that Chameleonaire. He's out here really teaching cats how to get after it.
Yeah.
Say, my brother, I appreciate it, man. This is one I know we chatted about for a long time, man. I hate the circumstance that we got around to it. It's this one. I wish, I know you loving being with the family, man, and getting a lot of time you might not have ever gotten, probably never will get again at this point.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But, man, I'm glad that we was able to catch you, you know what I'm saying, during this.
No, under the circumstances, you know, it's unfortunate, but, you know, we would be in the second round of the playoffs right now. Yeah. But. You know, I was telling Daryl before we got started, you know, we're still working every day. We're putting out shows every day on NBA TV. We got game time where we try to get a guest, a player to join or whatever. And I was telling Daryl that, like, it's easier to get players to join now because they're in the same situation that we're in.
Right.
It's very rare that we're all in the exact same situation. But there's no excuse why you can't join us today at noon because I know you got nothing going on.
Who is somebody that still won't join? Like you'd be like, man, I'm kind of busy.
Nobody. I mean, nobody has really given us.
Also,
the
nobody
runaround.
being like that.
These dudes are bored, man.
It's giving people something to do. They're like us. Like there's nothing to do. Like I'm watching a cartoon on Amazon when we get done with this show. You know what I'm saying?
Like, I can see Karl Malone being like, I'm busy. Like, I just see him as that type of guy.
No, I mean, there's people that's tough to get because they just are difficult to get. Like, your boy Iverson, like, he's, like, we can tell AI we're going to do this Wednesday at 6 o'clock. And Wednesday at 6 o'clock, he act like he don't know what's going on. So, it's just some people that's just who they are.
But
current players, old players, like, everybody is in the same boat. And if a player can't join, like, they can't join today, they're getting back at us like, hey, I can't do today, but I can do Friday or I can do next week. So these dudes, especially these players are bored, man. They want to get out the house. They want to do something that's not running around chasing the kids or on the game or whatever.
You got Aaron Gordon dropping diss tracks. And you got
exactly. We got to get these games back.
Like, please. That's what I know. I was like, man, we bad out here, man. He went back all the way to the All-Star game, the last thing that was significant in his life right before the
Keith, you just gave me a stress I hadn't felt in probably about a year and a half, 2 years, that producer stress when you're getting close to that time when you need somebody to come on and you're just like, are they going to be here?
I formatted my whole segment around you. I have nothing else to talk about.
Sometimes you get them and they're incredible. Like you're almost to the point where you're like, now I'm running on time. I want to keep this, but it's like, it's producing is a tough game. Hey, brother. Hey, peace, brother. people don't realize how much stress for the people behind the scenes putting in the things that you're taking in on TV.
And the other thing about now is that everybody's doing it like this, be via Zoom or Skype or whatever. So it's not even that we can get them, but their connection is good. They don't have the dog barking in the background. They don't drop out at any point. Like, I've done shows and I heard the doorbell ring. They'd be like, oh, the Amazon guy just came. I'm sorry. It's like, sorry, brother. We know that you're at home. We're all at home doing this.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, ain't nobody got jammed up like that? Hispanic TV. Did y'all see that Hispanic TV report?
Oh, yeah. Nobody got jammed up like that. Nobody.
He got jammed up with his new girlfriend.
Oh, no.
It was on like Univision or something. Like,
this is the worst time.
The telecast from the crib. And his new girlfriend walked in the background, but he's married.
That's why you gotta blur that. You gotta blur that back out, brother.
What's the little things you can put behind you, like the little. You can do it on Zoom where you put the different background.
Yeah, yeah.
When she back there, you just gotta do something. You gotta do something, dog. Get out of there.
Keith, man, thank you, man. Where can everybody hit you up at online, man? Like Instagram, Twitter, all that good stuff.
Yeah, Keith_Rob on Twitter, and then Keith_Rob314 on Instagram, man. And, you know, I'm always on there talking hoop on Twitter, talking hoop and what's going on. And, you know, make sure y'all watching what we got going on NBA TV, because we're really trying to push out some unique content during this downtime. We got EJ. You know, EJ's doing these interviews with players. He interviewed Trae Young earlier this week. So we're just trying to figure out different ways to keep people entertained at home, because I think everybody's starting to get tired of watching these old games and getting bored. So, you know, we got players coming on, rewatching and breaking down their old film. And, you know, we're just trying to keep it moving. Hopefully the season will be back here shortly.
Yeah.
You know,
We all need it,
but yeah, man, this has been fun, man. I hope I can come back at some point and talk shop with y'all.
Get you off, when you live NBA TV, going like the HBO Sports or something, we can get right.
Oh, man, hey, no, you can come back. You'd be part of the we go teach Matt this soccer one way or the other.
I'm trying to get Matt to be a Man U fan, man. Just go and come on home, man.
FIFA is the easiest way to learn, bro.
Yeah, dude, literally you learn all the players' names.
You'll learn.
Listen, bro, I'm game, man. I got a copy of NHL 20 I still haven't opened, and I know half the cats in the NHL. I'll play whatever. Listen, man, I'm at the point. This is going to be my sixth week at the crib, because I went in as soon as they said the thing crossed the lake. So across the pond, I should say. So I've been in the house for about 6-7 weeks. I'll play anything at this point. Let's get it going.
Well, y'all got MLS coming to the city, man. So you're going to have to learn. At the very least, you're going to have to learn the MLS squad.
Well, see, and that's what I'm waiting on. Like, I was like, real talk, I was waiting on that to be my stepping stool. Like, I'll start watching here, figure the game out, and then I'll go to the big leagues and get a team on that side.
I mean, you can go on there. They got MLS teams on the FIFA, man. So you can get on there and run on their team.
All right, I'm going to go buy. I get paid tomorrow. I'm going to buy FIFA tomorrow. I'm keeping myself on a very reasonable budget. I just spend the gas money I'm not spending on things like that. So I'll go buy FIFA then. I'll make room on my PlayStation and I'll play it. We'll touch base on it. Y'all can beat me up online and do it that way.
All right, well, man, thank you, Keith, man. Thank you all for listening to this special edition of the podcast, and we'll see y'all soon.